You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
And happy Wednesday morning to you. Appreciate you being here with us. We got a full show lined up today. Matt Brown from the Extra Points newsletter is going to be with us. Looking forward to talking to him about just some bigger, you know, policy matters, if you will, in college sports. He does a great job with his newsletter. We're also going to get in a little bit to the Saracen-Oaklawn debate that has certainly kind of taken the state by storm the last couple of days. And Bobby Petrino, the Arkansas offensive coordinator, spoke to reporters yesterday for the only time during the preseason camp. We'll have Ethan Westerman in to talk about some of the takeaways from listening to Bobby Petrino. But first, we're going to go to Matt Brown. As I mentioned, Matt runs the Extra Points newsletter. And it's a great newsletter, by the way, if you haven't signed up for it. I signed up for this. I'd heard a lot of people talking about this kind of within the industry, Matt. And so I think, I don't know, probably 8-9 months ago, I decided to sign up for your newsletter. And I love what you do. You take a unique approach to a lot of the big stories in college sports, some that people know and some that people don't know. Tell people about your newsletter and kind of how it came about and what you do for those who don't know about it.
Sure. And thanks so much for having me. I run Extra Points, which is a 4 days a week newsletter that covers off the field stories in the college athletics industry. And that includes everything from SEC football down to Division III in NAIA. Mm-hmm. I'm not a publication that's terribly concerned about who wins games. I care about that as a fan. I care about that as a sports writer. But I'm mostly writing about legal analysis, the NIL industry, television rights, conference realignment. We are actually sponsoring a Division III bowl game this year in Ohio, so we can better understand event sponsorship and licensing and some of the things that go into the back end there. And we found now, 4 years into this, this has been a useful tool and resource for newsrooms and radio hosts, for athletic directors across the country, conference offices, and thousands of fans. If you want to understand how the sausage gets made and how it fits in with university, Extra Points could be a resource for you.
So obviously one of the big stories right now, if not the big story that's facing college administrators, is this House versus NCAA settlement. It's still proposed. It's waiting a final resolution, which I think basically is just the federal judge who's residing over the case approving the details that have been agreed upon by both of the sides. We had Ross Dellinger on last week. We had Brandon Marcello on last week. They both gave their opinions on this. I'd be interested to get yours because I know you've reported on this extensively. And just how big of a deal this you think this is to college sports?
I mean, it's massive. It's probably the single biggest change, if not since NIL became kind of deregulated in 2021, probably the biggest change since television broadcasts became deregulated in the 80s.
The Supreme Court case of 84.
The Supreme Court, right, with Oklahoma and Georgia. And I hesitate to get too into the weeds about the specifics because I would emphasize there's still a lot that we don't know and a lot that athletic directors and practitioners don't know. It's not a foregone conclusion that this settlement is approved exactly as written. There are, I want to see the 3 or 4 different legal objections that have been raised. Sometimes these settlements do get smacked down by judges, like we just saw with UFC. So there's that possibility, or at least it gets sent back here for revision. But what is really significant, and I think you're particularly in this market, right, is everybody is going to be impacted on this, whether you're Arkansas or you're Little Rock or you're in the Southland or at the bottom here of Division I. Mm-hmm. Not everyone's going to share $21.5 million in revenue in cash. Most FCS and 1AAA programs don't bring in that money. You know, the revenue that they're reporting there is mostly coming from student fees and university subsidies. There's very little to actually share. But what you're going to see, and I've heard this from Ohio State, I've heard this in Big Ten country, from everywhere, is some more formal conversations about sport tiering. Because the difficult truth is it's going to be very hard for anybody, including in the SEC, to fully fund everything at the level that's necessary to be nationally competitive. Mm-hmm. And so what schools and conferences are going to have to sit down there and decide is, okay, if we're going to fully fund baseball, if we're going to go all in on 35, 36 baseball scholarships, where are we going to take something away? Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean drop a sport, but it might mean, hey, you know, we're going to drop to 6 track scholarships. We're going to get rid of your Dobo. We're going to get rid of your operations staff, or we're going to cut some salaries somewhere else. to make this work. And like the way I hear about it in the low major world is you're going to see some schools north of the Mason-Dixon line, I think, take a real step back in college baseball when they recognize they really weren't being very competitive now, and it's going to be even harder when their starter could get a full ride somewhere to be a setup man or a middle reliever. But they might decide to go all in on hockey or lacrosse or somewhere else. And what that looks like in Arkansas and throughout the state, whether that's wrestling, whether that's track or somewhere else, I think that's going to be an interesting conversation to have.
You know, one of the things when we had the COVID shutdown in 2020, that was a huge financial crisis for colleges.
Sure.
And one of the things we saw was that some schools, a lot of schools, especially small schools, dropped sports. You didn't see it so much at the power level. I think there were a handful of Big Ten teams that dropped, you know, 3 to 4 teams a piece. There were schools in the power conferences who dropped sports and then they brought them back. Stanford did that. I think Clemson did that with a couple of sports. How do you think, do you think that this is going to cause maybe more widespread sport droppage in terms of the power conferences?
I don't think it's going to cause that many droppages of sports unless those were things that schools were trying to do otherwise. And the way that it's been explained to me from many ADs is, one, you don't typically save that much money by ditching the rowing team or the fencing team. These are not places that have high operational budgets. Maybe you get rid of one or two back-end staffers. But the other thing is that invites you to lawsuits. And the dirty little secret is that most schools are not completely compliant with Title IX anyway. The federal government doesn't come in to do the audit unless somebody sues or draws attention to it. A great way to get suits sniffing around is to get rid of one of your teams and have somebody sue. So it's much easier to just say, we'll keep all the teams, but we're going to dramatically decrease scholarships and spending and back-end support. And that, I think, you will see. You don't see it as much for some of the smaller schools because the dirty little secret there, too, is that many really small institutions in Division I have wide sport offerings to make money on tuition, not because the sports themselves make any money. Like, nobody cares if they sell a single baseball ticket, but if you got a roster of 36 guys and only 8 of them are on scholarship, everybody else is paying tuition. And if you're one of these schools, particularly in my neck of the woods up here in the Great Lakes, where enrollment has plummeted because everybody's moving to the Sun Belt, then you might have a swim team and that might be a profit center, even though nobody buys a single ticket. So this settlement doesn't necessarily change that paradigm. Employment status would. But I think you will see some very significant reallocation of scholarships and staff spending, even if sports sponsorship stays similar.
Arkansas's athletics director, Hunter Yurecek, spoke to the UA trustees yesterday about the coming House settlement. And he said basically we're going to have to find levers to dramatically increase revenues and decrease expenses. I wonder, you know, there's been a lot of talk about something is coming down the pike. A lot of people believe that maybe athletes or the students, the athletes were going to become employees of the universities. That's not happening as of right now. I think that there's probably still some concern about whether or not that could happen down the line. I'm sure there is. But how ready do you think large athletic departments were for this extra $20 million to $30 million that they're going to have to pay in revenue sharing?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a struggle and a challenge for many institutions at the Power 5, Power 4 level. I don't think it's an insurmountable one, right? Part of what we're already seeing is a willingness at this level for schools to sell things that maybe they wouldn't have wanted to do 5 or 10 years ago. NCAA recently allowed universities to pursue on-field sponsors, for example. You already could have this for bowl games. Tennessee just announced one. Florida International has one with South Florida Kia. I was just at Northwestern yesterday. They have their medical center who's paid money to be their on-field sponsor. And I would expect that to be pretty standard. If it doesn't happen this year, it's not because somebody has an ideological reticence to it. It's because they couldn't find the right partner for the right amount of money. Because you want it to be someone that elevates rather than diminishes your brand. So that's going to be money. We might move into a world where we have brand patches on uniforms, right? Maybe we'll have a little Tyson's in the corner of a Hogs jersey at some point. Maybe not next year, but that's not impossible. And naming rights to things that wouldn't have been sold before either. The other kind of challenging thing about writing about this industry is because on one hand, college sports very much is a big business. There's a whole industrial complex of agents and software providers and travel agencies and marketing firms that make a lot of money and provide a lot of services. But it's also not a business in the sense that you're necessarily concerned about the bottom line. Like, you don't have to be profitable. These are nonprofit entities. They don't do their accounting like they're profitable. And that's part of why you've seen an explosion in spending in coaching salaries and supporting staff salaries and many facility projects. And what we're going to see moving forward is that calculus changing significantly. Stuff, you know, we already saw this in the NIL era, even before the house settlement, but stuff that would have been built 5 or 10 years ago is not going to be built now.
Right.
The idea of SEC football teams having nicer facilities than most NFL teams is not going to be the standard forever, or baseball programs having stuff that the majors don't have. That's that's not going to be the case. I don't think that that's a bad thing necessarily, but if you really slow down that cost curve and you begin to take your sponsorship and your ticket sales efforts seriously, like the pros do, you can find a lot of nickels and dimes in the couch cushions. For Little Rock, for Arkansas State, that's going to be more challenging. And I write about this a lot. You might have to be creative and take some risks and risk being embarrassed to find those quarters. But for Georgia and Arkansas, that money's there.
Yeah, and we've heard Arkansas's leadership talk about this. They've got a $20 million expansion to the soccer stadium in the works, a $20 million expansion to the softball stadium. And whereas maybe 5 years ago, you just take on a loan to pay for that, now I think what they're wanting is they want that cash to pay for it up front. Even Bud Walton Arena, there's talk about expanding Arkansas's basketball arena or completely overhauling it. I think maybe some of that talk has slowed down. Not to say that it won't happen, but I think that maybe you go back and you re-examine how you get that built relative to how you did it 5 or 10 years ago.
That's exactly right. And what we've heard from talking to people in the construction industry about this is that a lot of the projects that are happening now are ones that are explicitly oriented to be revenue positive. So to use the Bud Walton Arena as an example, hypothetically speaking, it's one thing to go borrow money and sell a bond and hit up your elite donors to add more seating or to do something else, but to renovate and maybe get rid of seating, but add luxury seating or more corporate sponsorship capabilities or other things where maybe you don't have quite as many seats, but the seats that you sell are at 5x markup. That kind of thing still happens. We're actually seeing this a lot right now in college baseball as the kind of places that can actually get 1,000 fans in the building realize, okay, if we put, you know, bar counters here and we have a separate tap here and we build up the experience, we can make that money back faster rather than just trying to sell tickets and get bodies and seats.
I wanted to talk about stadium naming rights. You wrote something recently on the FIU stadium being renamed. Is it Pitbull Stadium? Is that
Pitbull,
right?
Pitbull Stadium.
For the rapper. It's interesting because Arkansas is also looking for stadium naming rights right now. The Donald W. Reynolds Foundation, their naming rights expired at Arkansas June 30th. Hunter Yurecek said within the last year that they're not going to, you know, necessarily have someone ready by the time the rights expired, and they did not. But it's something that's being shopped around. I wonder how valuable you think a college sports naming right is right now, a college stadium naming right, especially for football. Do you think it's more valuable than it's ever been?
I actually don't. And the crazy thing about this is it depends enormously on what the stadium is, and also what kind of brand it is. You know, we've written stories about this that typically the commercial value of naming rights actually decreases the more the longer some other brand had that thing, right? Mm-hmm. If we renamed Wrigley Field tomorrow, I'm sure that would go for a gajillion dollars, but you and I would still call it Wrigley Field.
Yeah,
it's going to be Heinz Field for the Steelers in my mind for the next 20 years, regardless of whatever it is they're actually calling it right now. So you know, whoever buys naming rights for something that's known as another name for a while has to price that in.
Mm-hmm.
What universities are looking for from our conversations is that you can try to sell it and get the highest cash possible, or you can try to find a deal with a brand that can activate in a couple of different ways. Mm-hmm. So like using Florida International, for example, Pitbull is actually really attractive because FIU is a Hispanic serving institution.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of their students come from Florida. Most of them are Latino. Most of them are within 50 miles of Miami-Dade County, and they serve a lot of less traditional students. And who's somebody who can help increase the university's brand exposure and recognition among that audience? It's Pitbull, right? And here's somebody that say, I'm going to put your university in my music videos. I'm going to sign your athletes to NIL deals. I'm going to write an anthem for your stadium, and we're going to do all these other things. So I think if you're Arkansas, you look at, okay, yeah, I need a bag of money. But who's somebody that can also potentially drive financial or promotional value in other ways? Who's somebody that could provide something meaningful for my athletes or my students in general? And how do we have the potential to make this deal even more valuable? So that might be somebody, you know, a huge Arkansas brand, right? Like, I don't know, like what Dillard's or Tyson or something else. Or it might be maybe a smaller brand that's more tied to the athletics industry or can give something to the university itself. Like a really common partnership now is with credit unions. And then that credit union opens up a credit union in the student union, and they provide financial services for the entire university and student body. And that's value in different ways.
I found it interesting you said that EA Sports is was made aware of what was going to happen with FIU Stadium, and that there could be an update to the name even before the 26th release of the game.
That's right. What people at EA have told me is that they have a mechanism to drop updates during the season pretty regularly, you know, more than once a month. Some of that is going to be to include new plays that happen, right? If you see somebody in the SEC lineup with some crazy swinging gate play in week three, by week five, that can be in the game. They have staff meant to update that. It's also going to include uniforms, not just historic uniforms that weren't originally included, but I know of multiple institutions, some of these aren't public yet, that are going to tease and announce uniforms in the game before they're worn on the field this year. So there's going to be those regular updates. But I've heard this about Pitbull Stadium. I've heard this about some of the other like facility upgrades that are happening this year. I understand that maybe not every update's going to be in that everybody wants, but people should look for this. If Arkansas or does something crazy in late September, there's a good chance it will be in the game in October or November.
You really reported a lot on the EA Sports game leading up to it, probably as well as anyone out there. But
Thank you.
it seems like this game, even though it was expected to be a hit, it feels like it has maybe even exceeded what EA Sports could have imagined it would have been.
Unquestionably. The numbers that were thrown around when I would talk to people at EA, and also talking to people that like monitor EA stock, right? You know, like third-party analysts about the financial performance of this game. You know, the expectations I heard were 150, 200, 225, 250 million in revenue, which would be, and they're like, if we got that, that's good. That's you know, more than the NHL game sells. That's a solid secondary sports title. And there was a lot of uncertainty about how well this title would sell, given that it was gone for 11 years. It was only on new consoles. It's not really, it's not a PC release, so there was some tep, you know, it wasn't expected to do terribly well overseas. And it has smashed that, more than double. And I think part of that is not just the overwhelming nostalgia for people maybe our age who had meaningful experiences with this game when we were in college and we were young adults, but it has the engagement with athletes, the engagement with universities themselves, and with people who hadn't played this game before has been far better than EA expected. And I think that's great news for the schools, because that means Arkansas is going to get a bigger check than they thought they were going to be getting, along with everybody else. And it's good news for consumers. It makes it easier to pitch other sports video games in the college space. And it's good news for athletes, because they're going to have data, I think, to have more leverage to get a better deal for their licensing rights for future releases.
Wanted to talk about something else you've written recently about Latino outreach. Here in Northwest Arkansas, large Hispanic population, especially in Springdale and Rogers, here, you know, right next to Fayetteville. I found it really interesting, some of the things you wrote. Basically, how schools really want to have this outreach, but some of the logistical challenges that exist. Tell people about that.
This is going to look different for every kind of institution, right? Because who your Latino audience is in your community looks different, and who your partners are. One of the things that's a challenge for many schools is, you know, most ADs don't speak Spanish. Very few, to my knowledge, speak Portuguese. And if you don't have like internal staff that has that cultural competency that came from that community and knows how to speak to them, you can have a bunch of good ideas, but you're going to need some outside help. Otherwise, you risk looking dumb, whether that's trying to outreach to Latinos, whether or Asian Americans, or any specific like micro community in general, right? There's also a challenge because not very many schools do foreign language simultaneous broadcasts of any events. And part of that is because they might not own their own multimedia rights. And so you have to get not just, you know, potentially ESPN or the SEC network on board, but you might need Learfield or JMI or Playfly or anybody else who owns your radio rights to either sign off on that. And sometimes that doesn't work financially or even logistically. So people have had to get creative. There's also, I have some sympathy to this if I was talking to Hunter about it. Is right. Hunter's, the Eurochick's got to make money now. They have to sell sponsorships. They have to sell tickets. They have to get revenue because they got to pay these football basketball players tomorrow, essentially. And a dedicated outreach program to folks in Rogers might not really blossom for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's always a challenge. Like, can I dedicate money and time and resources to plant seeds that might not grow immediately when I have an urgent need now? And that's kind of the push and pull. But making that kind of outreach is something that I think would not just benefit Arkansas athletics, but benefit the University of Arkansas system, because many of those folks right there are going to be future students. Mm-hmm. They're going to be future professors, not just future ticket buyers. And if they're not, their kids might be. And just like I think this university wants to be for the entire state, not just Northwest Arkansas and Walmart transplants and a couple of other people. That's what you have to do. Everybody likes football. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes basketball. Sometimes they just need an invitation.
16, 17 years ago, Arkansas had a Spanish-speaking radio broadcast for their football games. It went away. I don't know why, but you also wrote about how schools are dealing with the Spanish language radio broadcasts.
Yeah. I think one of the really fun things, right, is UTRGV, the Texas Rio Grande, you know, it's literally right on the border. Mm-hmm. They had a little bit of challenges figuring this out, but they were close enough to Mexico. They're like, shoot, we'll just do it from a Mexican tower. We'll bring their truck over there and we'll get on linear Mexican television. We'll be on like Northern Mexico's ABC. Wow. And they'll do the pregame show and everything, and we'll do baseball games there. Obviously, you can't do that here. I know Arkansas has lots of fans in Texas. Arkansas has fans all over the South and the Southwest, and many speak different languages. And I think one of the really great things about being involved with a large land-grant research university is the whole world goes there. I mean, I'm sure within the athletic department, you've got athletes from all over the world. You have professors and other folks that speak other languages. And so if it's a challenge to maybe find an experienced television journalist who speaks Spanish very well or Portuguese, there's probably a graduate student or somebody else on campus who might be able to help with that. And so many schools, I think, have done a really good job of leveraging their students to help with television production and camera operation. I'm hoping that maybe with some very gentle cyberbullying, I said that with love, right? Or nudging some of these third-party companies to say, this is worth the investment. Mm-hmm. That might be something that Arkansas or other schools in this area could potentially do.
Matt, we're going to have to leave it there. I got a whole list of questions I could keep talking about you or keep talking about with you here for a couple hours. Maybe I've given you an idea, hopefully today, for a future Extra Points newsletter. What we're about to talk about, this Oaklawn Saracen Casino dispute and how electronic gaming is going to fund NIL collectives in some states. I think that's right in your wheelhouse, something that certainly could be explored a little bit more. But hopefully we can have you on again.
Absolutely.
In the future.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Yeah, that's something I plan to dig around a little bit more. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Matt Brown of the Extra Points newsletter. You can find him at extrapointsmb.com. When we come back, Ethan Westerman's going to join me. We'll talk about this Oaklawn Saracen deal. We'll also talk about Bobby Petrino and what he had to say about Arkansas's football camp. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Sam Pittman's going to come to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club next Wednesday. That's August 21st at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com. That's OzarksTix.com. Always fun when we have the Razorback coaches in at our Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. If you haven't been, what we do is you come in, you get yourself some lunch, you sit down. We will recognize some high school athletes and high school teams, player of the week, team of the week. Then the coach will get up, they'll say a few words, and then they'll step over to the side, and he and I will do a Q&A together. Always a very informative time, I feel like, when we have the Razorback coach, anybody at our Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Hope you'll check it again. That's OzarksTix.com. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories that you're probably not going to find anywhere else. You can subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. A couple of the stories that we have online today are let's talk first about Saracen Resort and this NIL matter that's being discussed, it seems like, around the water cooler everywhere in Arkansas this week. Mike Wicklund did a great job, you know, kind of digging into this and just what all the everything that this proposal entails, and basically just kind of a 30,000-foot view of the Saracen proposals that they want to expand online gaming in Arkansas, and one of the beneficiaries, I guess, of this would be the NIL programs, not just at the University of Arkansas, but at any university in Arkansas that wants to take advantage of it. There would be 50-50 raffles where, you know, say there's a Razorback football game, you go on your phone, you enter the raffle for, you know, however much money that's required. Think about a high school booster club. You go to a high school football game and the booster club is there and they are selling raffle tickets. And then at the end of the night, someone gets half of the pot and the other half of the pot goes to the booster club. Same thing applies here to the NIL, Ethan, is that half would go to the winner. I mean, it could be a big number potentially, you know, into the six figures, and half would go to the NIL program. There is pushback, though, against Saracen's proposal. Number one, you know, based on Mike Wickline's reporting, is that Saracen thinks that it would just take a change in the rules at the Arkansas Racing Commission, which regulates the casinos in the state. The governor's office is quoted in this story as saying, no, we think it would take, you know, it would be something bigger than that. It would probably take a new piece of legislation in order to expand this online gaming. And then there's opposition coming from the, you know, another big casino in the state, Oakland, down in Hot Springs, that they're against this from a, I guess, a policy matter. It's very, very interesting. And isn't it just like Arkansas that whenever you want to drum up public support for something, the Razorbacks or something related to sports kind of gets dangled as a carrot in the middle?
Yeah, that's kind of, I've been doing my reading on this morning. It's just such a complex, I think, issue that for us, it's the Razorbacks just kind of got tied into it to where it is now really on our radar. And that's honestly kind of what it seems like to me is happening from the legislative standpoint too, is it's the moment you throw the Razorbacks in there,
yep,
then people kind of get put in a pickle, because if you're against this policy change, then are you against supporting the university and its athletes and its NIL program? But then there's also some of them that probably have, you know, some sort of affiliation with Oaklawn and Hot Springs, where, you know, if they go and support this, there's going to kind of be some conflicts of interest in there, is what it seems like to me from what I've read. But yeah, the Razorbacks and the NIL program seem to me, from what I've read, just to kind of be almost that pawn in the middle, just to kind of make the ball really get rolling on this.
From what I can tell, and again, this is just based on the reporting that I've read, it appears that Saracen, going back, you know, probably about 5 or 6 months, was pushing for this this proposal, this rule change, and that at some point in that discussion, they got linked up with one of the NIL collectives, assuming Arkansas's, to potentially add this 50-50 raffle. Now, the 50-50 raffles, we mentioned high school booster clubs. You also see this at the pro sport level. I know the Dallas Cowboys do this. I was talking to Blake Sutton, who runs our board in the back. He said he was at a Kansas City Royals game recently. They've got it there. The Kansas City Chiefs do this. The Edmonton Oilers are a team that I've seen some of the leadership at Saracen mention as being an organization that does this quite well and on a successful level. But basically, you know, again, 50% goes to the winner, 50% goes to the winner's chosen charity, and the chosen charity in this case would be the NIL of whatever school you're supporting. It's I've kind of lost my train of thought here, but you know, basically, I guess where I was going with that was that this started maybe as a bigger proposal, something that I saw referred to in Mike's story as iGaming. And it's almost like, you know, this is something that's kind of come along late in the process as part of a bigger proposal.
Yeah, for sure. And it's what's interesting to me about all this as well is kind of just in the middle of this public discourse and et cetera, that Oaklawn had this big donation that they gave the
$500,000.
That just kind of is almost feels like to me just a really good PR stunt. You know, obviously, Arkansas likes it. They just got a big donation.
It was enough to get Sam Pittman to tweet.
And it got Sam Pittman tweeted.
When was the last
time
that happened?
Exactly. And And it was a Sam Pittman tweet. If you read that, that was his fingers that typed that. Mm. It was not, I don't feel like that went through any sort of PR person. I mean, I think that was a Sam Pittman tweet.
Straight from the heart.
Yeah, it felt straight from the heart. But then when you see the potential that this Saracen 50-50 has, that donation by Oakland could pale in comparison to how much money that Saracen and this 50-50 raffle could generate. So it's almost, it feels to me like two big, powerful casinos just kind of doing their own, right now, PR stunts to why what policy they want is going to be best for,
I mean,
for fans.
These are companies that print their own money. I read in the Democrat Gazette back in December that in 2023, the casinos in Arkansas, Oaklawn, Saracen, also Southland and West Memphis, almost $700 million that they I mean, it's amazing the type of money that's flowing through there that could potentially help NIL. The question I have, though, is, and this kind of goes back to what we talked about with the House settlement, and so much is still unknown about what are the collectives going to look like in 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think one of the big deals in this House settlement is that they want to rein in these NIL collectives. We talked about this last week with a couple of our guests, that there's going to be a clearinghouse that is established to review any NIL deal of over $600 to make sure that it's a legitimate NIL deal, mm-hmm. not a pay for play, and that some of the NIL money is going to, that any type of NIL money could potentially count against what a player could get in revenue sharing. And so there's a lot of questions still to answer, I think, as it relates to NIL. And what NIL is going to look like long term, at least from a collective standpoint. You know, there's a lot of thought that the collectives might come under the university umbrella, that the university will be the one that helps facilitate the name, image, and likeness deals, and probably bring NIL more in line with what it was intended to be, which was not a backdoor pay for play. It was intended to be, hey, you are the quarterback, you're notable, we're the car dealership, we want you to talk about our Chevys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think there's a lot of questions that still have to get answered on the NIL side. And there's also some thought as it relates to NIL and this House settlement. Does the House settlement supersede the patchwork of state laws that oversee NIL right now? And that is a very intriguing conversation to have, too. It's one of the reasons that you see the commissioners and the athletics directors and, in some cases, high-profile head coaches in NCAA leadership on Capitol Hill all the time, lobbying for federal legislation as it relates to NIL, because right now it is very much a state-to-state matter. Is there a instance maybe, and I've seen this mentioned, where there's a clearinghouse that says you can't do this, and the athlete or the university comes back and say, well, our state law says we can, and we're more beholden to the state law than we are to the – it could get real confusing real fast.
Yeah, the complexities of this are just – I mean, you don't even know where to start as far as what governing body supersedes the next. And like you said, it's what makes it so confusing, too, is so much of this is state-to-state, but, of course, college athletics don't operate in – you know, Arkansas is playing Tennessee. So if there's discrepancies of what can be done here and what can be done there, then that creates disadvantages. It just gets really confusing.
The big thing that I think is going to come out of this House settlement is that there's not going to be a level playing field. You heard Matt talk about this a little bit earlier, that schools are going to prioritize which sports that they want to be good at. There's not going to be a level playing field, folks. You heard this last week with Ross Dellinger or Brandon Marcello, too. Probably what's going to happen is, you know, a baseball team here says we can give 34 scholarships, and a baseball team that's in the same conference says, well, we can only do 25. Or maybe we can give 105 football scholarships, but we can only give 85. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how all of this works moving forward. There's a couple of stories at WholeHogSports.com today, though, that I hope you will look at. Like I mentioned, Mike Wickline's story on Saracen and all of the complexities. We just kind of scratched the surface as it relates to NIL. It's a very detailed story that I hope you'll take a look at. And then Ryan Anderson wrote on Hunter Yurecek's address to the University of Arkansas Board of Trustees at their retreat yesterday at Pettigene Mountain down in Morrilton, some interesting comments that Yurecek made just in terms of how the university and the athletics department is preparing for this House settlement that's going to bring you know, probably anywhere between $20 and $30 million in new expenses for the department beginning as soon as this is approved, which some people think could be as early as next fall. Okay, we're going to talk football when we come back. Bobby Petrino had his only press conference of the football preseason yesterday. We'll go over what he talked with Ethan, but first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Serving its community since 1971, Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, you can find them in Bentonville at 507 South Main or online at bentonvilleglass.com. And we appreciate Bentonville Glass for their support of our podcast. All right, Bobby Petrino spoke yesterday at the football stadium following practice. It's still very surreal to me to walk into a press conference and see Bobby Petrino sitting there.
Yeah, for sure. And it was weird in the spring having him come in and speak to us because he was just kind of, I think the word that got stuck on him was mellow in practice all throughout the spring. He was just teaching. But he's now really picked it up, like as far as you go to practice and you're hearing Bobby. And so it's getting a little bit more normal, I guess, just because getting to see maybe this old Petrino that I've heard a lot of stories about, and but it is bizarre. It's almost the same as Calipari for me, that sitting in a Calipari press conference, it's like, wait, tell me this 1 year ago if you had said, I was thinking about it yesterday, these stories that we wrote about Bobby Petrino, had they gone on our site 1 year ago, people would have just thought it was like total parody.
Well, you know, and I've talked to people about this before. You know, a lot of times when you're in the heat of the moment writing about, hey, Bobby Petrino's coming back to Arkansas, or John Calipari is coming to Arkansas, or they're getting ready to pay athletes $21.5 million per year, you know, you're in the moment, and in that moment, it doesn't really register with you just the power and, you know, the gravity of what you're writing. And you kind of have to step back a little bit later. You know, it probably took 2 months whenever I stepped back, and I was like, John Calipari's really at Arkansas.
Yeah.
And, you know, these and Petrino, I think it's probably kind of the same thing. Again, we're 9 months removed from him being hired as the offensive coordinator, and you still kind of step back when you go in the room. It's like, wow, this is really hard to believe that he's here. Let's go over some of the things that he talked about. Obviously, he talked a lot about quarterbacks, and Talen Green was a big topic of discussion. I asked him a couple of questions about Talen, about, you know, what are some of the things they've worked on. And one of the really interesting comments that I thought he gave yesterday was whenever I asked him about Talen Green's completion percentage. There's been, you know, a lot said about that, and you know, just the way he played last year at Boise State. It was not a great season for him. It wasn't a bad season. It's just kind of an okay season.
A great freshman
All-America in 2022.
It was a letdown year for the potential that sophomore slump. Freshman. Yep.
And I think you see that a lot of times. You know, it doesn't matter what sport you are. If you have a really good breakout year, I think the coaches spend the offseason figuring out how do we stop that guy next year. And I think there may have been some of that in the Mountain West Conference last season. But, you know, Petrino said you can't judge a quarterback just on accuracy. He said he doesn't look at percentages. He looks at, you know, just the intangibles, the intelligence of a quarterback. And I thought it was a very interesting insight into how he analyzes quarterbacks that might or might not fit into his system.
Yeah, it feels to me like with the Talen Green, or even the receivers he was talking about, he spent time kind of similar stuff with Isaiah Cetania and Tyrone Broden, how last season didn't go probably how those two thought. It seems to me like Petrino looks at the player like, and he just sees, like, this is what I think I can turn them into. It's less about what he's seen them, you know, in past film or whatever do. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like he saw Talen Green, the potential there, whatever he saw, I guess, from a athletic standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, et cetera. And he's like, I can turn a pretty good quarterback into a great one. That's the vibe that I get, that Petrino thinks that he can, you know, get Taylen Green in his offense, and all of a sudden this guy's going to take off. But yeah, I think that there's a confidence about Taylen Green that Petrino has for sure.
He said that Taylen Green, and we've heard Sam Pittman kind of allude to this too, came in and from day one he took leadership and command of the locker room, and he mentioned that Fernando Carmona was in that same, you know, that same vein, that the two of them just came in and they took over right away. And I feel like that's what you want to see from your quarterback. I feel like the best teams are the teams that have a quarterback who's a very strong leader.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that equate to wins and losses? I don't know. But I think it is a good sign for the team that the quarterback has come in, and not just that he wanted to be a leader, but I think that the teammates accepted that leadership mm-hmm. right away too.
Yeah, I was hearing, so, you know, of course, going into spring, whenever there was Jacoby Criswell here, who was last year's backup, and Taylen Green's the newcomer, you got Malachi Singleton in there, you know, almost out of just standard, you know, without any of these guys ever being the starter at Arkansas, you know, Sam Pittman said going into the spring practice, like, hey, we have a quarterback competition. Basically, it's almost like you just got to give the guys a chance. But anybody that was around or just kind of heard the vibe, it just seemed like if Taylen Green doesn't win this job, what happened? Because from teammates, from coaches, et cetera, it just seemed like he won their respect pretty quick, just the way that he came in and he kind of was the quarterback, if that makes sense. Like, he came in and didn't make it really a question. And I think you want that. You want a guy on your team that's at quarterback going to be that guy that kind of walks in the room and immediately lets you know, like, that it's kind of their team.
A couple more things that I've written down here that I thought was kind of interesting that Petrino had to say about Taylen Green. He said that he and his receivers wanted to go throw so much that they asked them, basically, don't go do this on the weekends. And, you know, basically, there was a little bit of a compromise that they still wanted to throw together on the weekends, and so they took Saturdays off and they threw on Sunday. I thought that was just kind of an interesting nugget. And I really thought it was interesting when he was asked about just Green and his mindset, and he gave an anecdote. He said that Green wanted to run a play the first thing in practice, a play that he's really been struggling with, and he said he thought that showed something about the quarterback.
Yeah, and Bobby said this pretty adamantly, that he wants his quarterbacks right now not being concerned. He wants them going for the hard plays or what's difficult for them. He said, I forget exactly how he said it, but basically, like, this is the time to be a little bit ambitious and try and make those plays. Because I know a lot of people are concerned about Taylen Green had not a great ratio of touchdown to interception last year. His freshman year was fine with that, but it seems like Bobby's not really too concerned right now with in practice, which I haven't seen Taylen throwing interceptions in practice. It just doesn't happen regularly. But Bobby wants him kind of taking those chances right now and kind of being ambitious. So that definitely stood out to me.
He said that the running game is taking a little bit of time to get in sync. He said that's probably partially because there's a really good defensive line on the other side. Had a lot of great things to say about Arkansas's receivers. It's clear that Petrino likes Isaiah Satania, who we've talked about quite a bit. It's clear that he really likes Andrew Armstrong. And he likes Monte Harrison, Ethan.
Yeah, he said.
And you saw Monte Harrison running first team in practice this morning.
Yeah, Monte Harrison went first team. It was kind of a byproduct of still Tyrone Burden and Andrew Armstrong are still out. But, I mean, still, there's a whole lot of other receivers in that room. Like, Jaden Wilson went with second team. And I get it. This changes. Jaden Wilson is gone with first team, too. It's kind of a musical chairs right now as far as who goes where. But it's kind of one of those deals where whenever you see a guy ever make it to getting to play with the first team in this fastball, you're like, okay, possible rotation guy. I mean, the fact that putting him in there with him. And he said Monte's going to play this year. Like,
he said he's going to help us.
Yeah, he's going to help us this year. So came from Bobby's mouth that that he thinks that that Monte Harrison is going to be able to actually help him in the game, which I think that's kind of been the question about a 29-year-old guy. Is it's like, is he going to actually just – is he going to just take a leadership role on the team, or is he actually like doing this so he can get on the field? Yeah, Bobby said he's definitely going to help us play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So he said play a lot, which tells me, okay, this is not just kind of a hypothetical.
I think with Harrison, there was a question because he came from pro baseball and he hasn't played football since his senior year in high school in, what, 2012, 2013, you know, just how well would he acclimate to being back around the game? Petrino said he runs good routes, said he catches the ball well, is big and strong. And then, you know, as I thought would probably be the case, he said the players love being around him. And I think that's, if nothing else, if Monte Harrison doesn't catch a single ball for Arkansas, which I think I'd probably be a little bit surprised if that's the case, just based on the discussions about him. But if nothing else, he adds a real presence, I feel like. Someone who's really been, you know, through some life experiences to that locker room, and I feel like that can be very beneficial to a team. It's nothing that really shows up on Saturday necessarily, but it at the same time, it really shows up on Saturday.
Yeah, well, and a guy that's played in Major League Baseball knows to not take a single practice off. Like, you don't. It's your job.
And probably not to get too discouraged about some failure from time to time.
Exactly, yeah. And so that's kind of what Bobby mentioned, is he said he comes out and practices hard. And, like, I think it's one thing to hear the guy practices hard from one coach. When you hear Bobby Petrino saying that, because let me tell you, Bobby Petrino is the first one to let somebody know on the practice fields right now if he thinks they're not jogging fast enough.
He's not just passing out compliments.
He's not passing off a "you practice hard" compliment, because, I mean, there's been some players that have gotten kind of chewed into the past few weeks, just for if Bobby sees them jogging, even just after a play, he wants them to practice hard the full time. Monte Harrison seems like the type of guy that he's not going to need any sort of show up and practice. He just has that pro mindset.
We're finishing up this week our next Hogs Illustrated magazine. I want to tell you, you can stay on top of all the Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Complete access to wholehogsports.com along with your HI subscription. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. Hogs Illustrated, our deadline is this week to put out our UAPB preview magazine. I don't know how much of a preview there's going to be of UAPB in there, but I know that everybody's been working on you know, putting some unique stories in that magazine, so we hope that you'll check that out. You know, with Petrino, going back to him for just a second, I haven't covered him in 12 years. Obviously, he got fired here in 2012, and now he's back. But I get the sense with him that he is enjoying coaching now as much as he has in a really long time.
Yeah.
You know, he took what by any measure is a step down, becoming a head coach at Missouri State. Who knows how much he enjoyed that level? Maybe he did. Maybe he liked the fact that, you know, it had to have been a little bit less demanding, at least externally. I think internally he probably put the same pressure on himself, but it had to be a little bit, you know, less demanding externally than these Power Five type jobs that he's had in the past. And then we all know what happened at Texas A&M last year, where he, you know, was leading the Aggies offense, but he was basically doing it handcuffed by calling plays out of someone else's
he was
playbook, not
co-offensive coordinator, if that.
Yeah, I mean, he was the play caller.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the kind of the bottom line. But he just seems like there's a real, I don't know, there just seems like a real piece. He mentioned yesterday that he's getting to coach and teach more now than he has in a really long time, and he's really enjoying that aspect.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, when he's been the head coach at, other than A&M, which we already discussed, that was not really his offense necessarily. He's been a head coach, which is just so demanding of your figuring out what's going on defense, special teams, everything. You're the person watching over it all. This is him just getting to come into a program, and his job is make this offense yours, like just the offense. And Sam Pittman's pretty hands off of, like, I mean, Bobby, you do what you want with the offense. Sam's been going and helping Eric Mateos coach the O-line a lot. It seems to me like Bobby is probably really loving that his responsibility is, hey, you're an offensive guru. Your only responsibility with this team is get this offense good. I mean, he doesn't even – it's funny. He remembers the numbers for a lot of the guys on the defense, but you don't ask Bobby Petrino about specific Arkansas defenders, like, with names, because he's like, I'm so focused on my offense right now that I'm just looking – it's more like – it's almost like going into an opponent game week of, like, this is the defense I'm seeing right now. How do we go at this? It seems to me like he is so laser-focused on this offense right now and enjoying that nothing else matters.
I've talked to a lot of assistant coaches, not just in football, but, you know, just throughout all different sports over the years. And one thing that I noticed from them is they love it when they have a head coach who hires them to do a job, and then the head coach just gets out of the way and lets them do the job that they were hired to do.
Yeah, and I think that's honestly a good leadership quality for Sam Pittman to have, to employ his offensive coordinator and say, hey, you're the guy who's built a reputation being an offensive guru. This is your baby. Do with it as you please. I think that that's just honestly kind of one of the most empowering leadership methods to do that.
Okay, other than Monte Harrison, anything stand out at practice today?
Couple PBUs I saw in the fastball. It was consecutive. I'm trying to remember who had them, but it was good. Selman Bridges, the freshman, was actually one of them. Okay. He high-pointed a pass to Davion Dozier and swatted it down, and I think the next was one of the Metcalfs. I feel bad not remembering which one, but one of the Metcalfs had a PBU. That's all that stood out from practice other than, hey, the personnel is looking pretty much the same way it did yesterday. But Monte Harrison ran with the first string. So did C.J. Brown, the freshman. I think C.J. Brown will see the field this fall in some capacity. Not sure volume, but I think he'll see the field.
Travis Williams, the Razorbacks defensive coordinator, he's going to talk to reporters today. We'll have plenty from what he had to say on our website at wholehogsports.com. You can also read the latest from Ethan and Christina out at football practice on our website. We appreciate you being with us today. We appreciate Matt Brown from the Extra Point newsletter and all of the insight that he had to provide to us. Thanks to Blake Sutton, Spence Tyree, Anthony Christensen back in the back helping us out on our production today. For Ethan Westerman, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for being here. We'll be back Thursday with another podcast. Until then, hope you'll join us at wholehogsports.com.